You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is the MLB Extras Braves podcast. Tim McMaster here along with our Braves reporter, Mark Bowman. Mark, we're going to continue to preview the different positions on this team as we go around the horn. Today, we cover the outfield. Before we get to that, though, a little more hot stove stuff to talk about before we look ahead fully to spring training. The JT Realmuto sweepstakes, we'll call it, is down to four teams reportedly. Our Joe Fresaro has reported that. And the Braves, one of those teams, along with the Dodgers, Padres, and Reds. It sounds like the Padres and Reds have kind of taken a step forward. And it also kind of seems like the Braves have just kind of hung around the periphery but haven't been eliminated. What's the latest from you? Because I know you check in on these things daily.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's best to – let's go all the way back to November where it looks like, the Braves have that need. And we knew that they had the resources in terms of prospects to get the deal done. There wasn't a match. The Braves moved on. They signed McCann. We know that they continue to check in, maybe even a little bit more aggressively as of even through the first or second day of the winter meetings. From that point on, what I was told was, the Braves had basically said, that they definitely were turning their focus away from Realmuto. We've talked about this at the same time. When somebody says that, that the landscape can change. In other words, as long as he stays available, the Marlins feel a need to deal him and other teams aren't biting, that the price could change. The Braves have checked in, from what I can understand, probably nothing more than, hey, are you still looking? Would a deal still require a controllable everyday piece, such as Ozzy Albies? From what I understand, that's what they've been told, that would be necessary to get a deal done, especially with the Braves. Whether that's an in-division thing, it remains to be seen, especially if the Dodgers or Padres get a deal done, we'll get a better understanding of that. But that's from the Braves' perspective. If they are the fourth team in the mix, one of four teams in the mix, my thinking is that they're number four. And, look, it helps the Marlins to keep the Braves in the mix because, the more teams that are still in there, that improves their bargaining power, maybe helps with negotiations with whether it's the Reds, the Padres, or the Dodgers. Could a deal still happen? Yes. Do I think it's less than 30% chance that Realmuto ends up in Atlanta? Yeah.
All right, but that makes a lot of sense. And you wonder if the Marlins may have passed up a better deal early in the offseason when they had the opportunity than what they may end up with in the long run. All right, so Braves, when you think about this roster as we get closer to spring training, if the catcher position is set, where could they still make a move? Or do you think this is it, that roster they have put together right now is how they show up down in spring training?
Well, I mean, they do need to add organizational catching depth in my mind because, you look at what you have there right now. You have Brian McCann, who started 94 games as a catcher in 2017 for the Astros. You've got Tyler Flowers, who we know he missed all of April last year or most of April last year. The pace that he was on in terms of games started was 81 games. Can they physically do this at this age? I mean, all of that has to do with how McCann recovers distances himself from last year's knee surgery. It doesn't matter what age they are right now or what their recent health history is. You need more organizational depth than they have right now with Rafi Lopez and Alex Jackson. They have reached out and talked to Devin Mesoraco about the possibility of starting the year in Gwinnett. He's still looking to go to camp to compete for an opening day roster spot. So I don't think there's a lot of interest there. You look at the other remaining free agents, and there's not a lot. Drew Butera His dad is a longtime Blue Jay scout. So he has, you know, a relationship with Alex and Perry. But, you know, Drew hasn't been in the minor league since 2013 either. I think he's still looking for a chance maybe to also open the year in the big leagues. It's going to be interesting to see if they can do it. But I do think that is very important because, you know, let's just say that Tyler Flowers and Brian McCann were both 27 years old and completely healthy. You still can't go into the season thinking that your next your insurance consists of, you know, Rafi Lopez and Alex Jackson, who still has to prove that he can catch it at the big league level. So I think that's where far more likely that's where you're going to see the catching move than with JT Realmuto being added to the mix. And even if Realmuto is added to the mix, you're going to end up getting rid of, or I would assume that maybe Tyler Flowers will be in that deal. And you're still in that same position from an organizational depth standpoint.
All right, let's move on to the outfield, Mark. And it's an outfield that now returns intact from 2018, thanks to Nick Markakis returning to the team. It's a one-year deal with a second-year option for the club. It's pretty clear when you look at this contract, Mark, that Nick Markakis really wanted to be a member of the Atlanta Braves. It's been a slow market for sure. Were you surprised at the details of this deal and the money numbers that Markakis ended up agreeing on?
Yeah, I mean, when you have a season like that, you know, Markakis says, I think you feel like you deserve a multi-year deal. You don't want to take a pay cut. But at the same time, like you said, the fact that he accepted this deal shows you how much that he not only wanted to stay in Atlanta, wanted to stay with an organization who has been significantly impacted by, you know, his guidance, leadership, and his presence over the last over the previous 4 years. So I think it's, you know, I think the Braves, if they had their top pick going back to November, and they laid out and said, here's what we want, Michael Brantley was probably at the top of that list. And we all know that Brantley accepted the deal with the Astros, who, you know, they're able to offer the chance to occasionally be a designated hitter. And that's certainly attractive to a guy who's had some health issues over the last few years. And, you know, the no state income tax, that's something that the Braves couldn't offer. I don't know that the Braves definitely offered dollar for dollar for Brantley, but I would say he was the one guy that they targeted. They talked to some teams about some trades. They were never as high on Andrew McCutchen as the Phillies were. You know, and it's you don't want to just say that Markakis is a fallback option because, you know, a guy that's given so much to your organization over the last few years, you're never going to hear the Braves say that. But at the end of the day, it's what it seemed like, especially, you know, when the dollars were what they are. You know, Alex said that money, you know, that price had to come in where it did. And once Nick agreed to that, you know, now you've got some comfort knowing exactly what you have out there. He became a Gold Glover last year again. Once, you know, with the help of NCRT's range, the analytics that positioned him better, he's comfortable in that clubhouse. I think he and Brian McCann are going to be provide strong leadership there. And you know, at the end of the day, I think getting a little bit more regular rest than he did last year. Can he repeat exactly what he did in the first half of last year? Maybe not, but at the same time, he's not going to decline like he did in the second half. So I think it's a pretty safe bet, and it could prove to be a very valuable deal for the Braves.
Yeah, it certainly is. And considering his age and the possibility of some regression, it's probably the price tag they wanted for sure. All right, moving over to center field, you mentioned Ender Inciarte and the range he has out there. Then you have Ronald Acuna, his range in left. But Inciarte won his third straight Gold Glove in 2018. He did post his lowest batting average of his career, but not terrible at .265. And he drove in the most runs he has in his career with 61. So he was still a productive bat as well. Inciarte, at this point, Mark, he's pretty much in that prime. I think you know what you're getting. You're going to get the great defense. The bat is always in that sort of range. It's just a nice, dependable guy to have there in center field.
No doubt about it. You know what you're going to get from him defensively, and you have a pretty good idea of what you're going to get from him offensively. 2 years ago, he had a 200-hit season. Last year, the biggest problem, and look, he had some struggle against some right-handers in the first half, but if you go back and really look at those numbers, it was just the fact that he did not hit left-handers at all during the first half of the season. The second half of the season, he was closer to hit him at more like a 350-plus clip and 800-plus OPS. He got back to where he was from the middle of 2016 through the end of 2017. When he came over from the Diamondbacks, that was the knock against him. Maybe he can't hit lefties. There was talk about platooning him. But when he really started to get hot during the second half of 2016 season, that was the biggest difference, was he suddenly had – he didn't just improve against lefties. He had regular success against them. So I think that's one reason the Braves look at what he did in the second half last year. When they add Markakis, don't get that prototypical cleanup hitter to fill that outfield spot. Now their choice is to move Ronald Acuna down there and likely fill the leadoff spot with Enciarte. So we'll see how that works. I think we can debate that, whether that's smart to take, you know, 40 to 50 plate appearances a year over the course of a season away from Acuna. But at the same time, you know, I do think that's the way Brian Snicker's leaning. He wants to get, you know, a table setter right there in front of Josh Donaldson, who will hit in front of Freeman. And with Acuna sitting behind him and Donaldson sitting in front of him, I think Freddie Freeman is primed to possibly have a pretty special season.
Yeah, certainly. That lineup is looking pretty good. And then around to left field, you mentioned Acuna, National League Rookie of the Year, burst onto the scene and pretty much just lived up to the hype that he had created in 2017 when he had such an amazing run through the minor leagues. Now Braves fans get a full season of Ronald Acuna. And I mean, is there any worry of a sophomore slump here, Mark?
I mean, here's the thing. Can he do exactly what he did over those final, you know, after the All-Star break last year? Okay, maybe he doesn't match that, but he's also not going to struggle like he did, you know, before the break. I don't see a sophomore slump in this guy. I think the mechanical adjustments that he made, basically getting his hands out in front of his shoulders, you know, creating, or let's just say taking advantage of, you know, the bat speed he already possessed. I think that was the big change that he needed. Our pitcher's going to have a, you know, a better read of him. Will he have to make some adjustments? Sure. But here's a guy that handled the fastball, handled the breaking ball, handled off speed stuff. I do not see a significant decline.
How about this bench? Adam Duvall came over last year and really struggled. He struggled in Cincinnati for much of the year, and then he came to Atlanta, and it got worse, not better for him. Is he the main – who's the fourth outfielder? Is he that guy? Is there somebody else I'm not thinking of?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the big key is, you know, obviously with Josh Donaldson coming over, Johan Camargo becomes that super utility guy. You also have Charlie Culberson, who filled that role last year. Duvall could, you know, he's your most likely backup outfielder if they choose to carry him in that role. You have to question whether you want to do that. I know that, you know, they settled with him and, you know, opted to tender him a contract and everything, knowing that, you know, there's a possibility that he may not be an everyday player, or the likelihood that he wouldn't. Now you have to take a step back and say, did he struggle so much in Atlanta because he wasn't an everyday player? I think he'll get that opportunity to be that backup outfielder. But I, you know, that bench just as a whole, I think that is what you want to look at, is just that versatility that Camargo provides, not only across the infield, but he's going to wear an outfield glove and get some time out there during spring training. I think he can help there. Let's take a step back to to October and look at that bench that they carried in the division series. And you had, basically had Tyler Flowers and Charlie Culberson were essentially your only bats. You also carried Lane Adams. Three of the five guys on that bench were either DFA'd or claimed off waivers last year. Now, all of a sudden, you're talking about going into the season with, you know, Culberson and Camargo and possibly Adam Duvall all being potential key pieces off the bench. You can already see where they are much deeper. I think there's you look at last year after Camargo, you know, became the starting third baseman, it's easy to argue he was the third most valuable offensive contributor over those final 3.5 months. You know, only sitting behind Freddie Freeman and Ronald Acuna. It's tough to take that bat out of the lineup on an everyday basis, but I do think that whether he spells Ozzie Albies at second against certain right-handers or just to give him a break, the same thing with Dansby Swanson. We know Josh Donaldson's not going to play every day. Adam Duvall could possibly play some first base at those 3 or 4 games that Freddie doesn't want to play. And Charlie Culberson last year, for Ed Freeman calling him possibly the team MVP just because of how valuable he was at so many different positions, and just with all the clutch hits, we saw what he can do off the bench. So already from that perspective, and a very important aspect of the team, that bench is, much stronger than it was last year.
All right, one more guy I wanted to talk to you about isn't going to be on the big league roster unless things go incredibly right for him or incredibly wrong for this team in spring training. But the top 100 prospects list was released by MLB Pipeline this week, and Christian Pache checked in at number 37. We think all about the Braves' young pitching prospects, but they also pitching prospects. They also have some position guys, obviously Austin Riley at third, and Pache. He's expected maybe to be still a year away, Mark, but he's by all accounts, the best defensive outfielder in the minors right now, which is kind of scary when you think about the defensive outfielders the Braves have at the big league level. Is there a chance that at some point in 2019 he could find his way to Atlanta, or is he just set to spend this year fine-tuning things to get ready for 2020?
I'd say it's much more likely that he gets here in 2020. September call up, we'll see. He has come a long way. He last year, you mentioned, maybe the best defensive outfielder in the minors. Andrew Jones last year, we all know what kind of defender he was throughout his career. When he was in camp, he said that Pache was the best defensive outfielder in the organization. That includes an organization that at a time. It includes Inciarte, who's now won 3 consecutive gold gloves. So, this kid does, we know what he can do with his glove. Before last year, he had never homered. He ends up combining for 9 homers, at 2 different levels last year. We're still seeing him physically develop. We saw exactly what that physical development could do for Camargo's power over the years or over the last few years. He's still a very interesting prospect. I think that Braves fans were introduced to him last year, became very excited about what he has to offer. I think there's reason to be very, patient throughout this season. Maybe at this time next year, we're talking about him filling one of those spots. Maybe all of a sudden you're looking at 2020 and saying Pache, Acuna, and Inciarte or another piece there. But the possibility, if he lives up to expectations, continues to physically develop and add power, it could be very interesting to see him and Acuna share an outfield for you know, many years to come.
Yeah, good luck getting a ball in the gap against those three guys on the outfield. That would remind me a little bit of what the Red Sox have right now defensively in the outfield. When you talk about Benintendi, Bradley, and Betts, that kind of coverage area in the outfield would be pretty special in Atlanta. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the pod. You can find Mark on Twitter at MLB Bowman. My handle is MLB_McMaster. All of our club podcasts are at MLB.com/podcast, on Apple Podcasts, and also on Google Play. For Mark Bowman, I am Tim McMaster. Thank you for checking us out here on the Braves Podcast.